OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball.
Are you crazy?
This is OTB Sports Radio.
This week on OTB Gold.
I have no control over my own mind. I went one stage 12 days without sleeping.
Are you a complete rookie?
You may say, why is he always talking about whites and blacks? Because everything happened to me is racial.
I was never as heavy as I was. I was 10 stone 11. And to lose that 7 pounds was torture.
OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball. Weekdays from 1 p.m. and 6 p.m.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, Ronan O'Gara with us. You're there, Ronan?
Hey, Joe. Yeah.
So the real world has intervened in sporting matters. The Italian game is off. We have that confirmed now. We're talking maybe 3:30 or so in the afternoon. This may well have, the story may well have changed come this evening. Who knows what will happen. Ireland are going to gather in Dublin this evening. They're still going to have their two-day training camp as planned. The next game, as things stand, is France on the 14th of March. Although I see in France even a second death has been announced today. And England have to go to Rome in the final round. So we may have shades of 2001 all over again. The Six Nations may say, instead of, you know, game here, game there, let's halt the whole thing for now. I don't know. But that's where we are at the moment. The only news at the moment is the Italian match is off, and that's where we are. Kind of a strange one for the players.
Yeah, very, very strange one. And when you're a player, especially after how Sunday went, you just want to get on that pitch as quickly as possible. Not for a training session. A training session helps, but what really helps is having a game to get that out of your system. But if it's the schedule, as you have said there, that they go to Paris next, That's a difficult task. I think it was ideal getting a little bit of confidence back under the belt playing Italy, but no, I wasn't aware of that. I thought it would be pushed back a week, but I presume that the fixtures would have remained the same. But that's interesting. If that's to happen, it becomes very, very tricky for Ireland's next game.
Before we come up with some solutions, let's diagnose the problem that was Twickenham. Where do you want to start? Give me the things which jumped out at you as major worries.
Well, jumped out straight away is what that can happen, and happened to a lot of teams. I think what is still, I suppose, incredibly puzzling is that there was a 12-point deficit. That's the positive. The areas of concern would be how much more dominant physically England were than Ireland. And I suppose how much more control in the game they had. But one of them is kind of interlinked with the other. If you win collisions, you're on the front foot. You have more time in the ball. You're more spatially aware and you can attack where you want. Ireland didn't give their halfbacks any bit of a platform. But also with that, we probably didn't kick accurately out of hand, or we potentially ran into brick walls when, if they have 13 men in the front line or even 12 in the front line, it means that there's probably space through the air or space in the backfield. And that's very easy to say as a hurler on the ditch and sitting on the outside. But I think what's important to know too is that it seemed to me that a lot of the leaders lost potentially the capacity to think on their feet. And that happens when you're under the pump in Twickenham. I've been there and you're looking for solutions, but there aren't any coming.
Yeah, I mean, should this team not have enough experience to think on their feet a little bit? Like, let's take an example you gave.
Yeah,
an example you gave, and Gordon Darcy today in the Irish Times wrote a very good piece. So we'll come back to the collisions when England had the ball. But let's say when Ireland eventually got their hands on the ball and it felt like it was very hard for us to make any metres. You know, Gordon Darcy highlighted something you talked about. He pointed out the English weren't committing huge numbers to rooks. They were fanned out across the pitch. They had nice spacing, and Ireland, you know, tried to go wide early, and boom, lines shoot up. And actually, we should have been, you know, picking jam a few times, suck them in, keep them honest, almost is the phrase. Now, that's not, you know, that's not the honours class of rugby. That's a go-to, you know, like when a team is setting up like that against you, really, you should spot that fairly quickly, especially when there were such echoes of 2019. So not thinking on their feet is very generous, you know?
It's a go-to if you get parity or a little bit less than parity up front, but when you get smashed up front, there's very little you can do because you have so much less time on the ball, which means that they can have a little bit more spacing in the defensive line, which means that their wingers and their 15 and their other winger can play exactly where they want to, because the run threat really isn't there. So, you know, it is difficult being a 9 and 10 to change that. And I suppose what's evident after the weekend, Joe, is that we were got outplayed in every area of the game, really, from scrum to maul to line out to pass quality to tackle our dominant tackles. So it was one of those days where England manipulated us. We didn't manipulate them once. And I think, and I've said it a lot in the Examiner on Fridays, I think sometimes the gripe I have with the modern game, and sometimes how it's played, it is a possession game, but also do not underappreciate scoreboard pressure. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, playing the game in the opposition half. It means you're giving away possession, yes, by kicking. But like, what still applies, I think, in the modern game, sorry, I know it applies, is that when a forwards get up off the ground from a ruck or a maul or a scrum or a lineout, they love to see the ball trickle into touch in front of them. It does an awful lot to feed their body language, to feed their inner drive, to make sure that kind of they are the guys being set first by seeing their halfbacks keeping the ball in front of them. But it is a balancing act then when you have less possession, and then you say, well, why would you kick it away? That's just giving England more possession. But there were probably times at the weekend, even at 17-0, you know, I remember in studio us discussing it. I said 17-3, if you score next, 17-10. Like that, the mentality involved in that is huge, as opposed to a two-score game. But you weren't listening to me live either on Sunday like you are now, Joe.
I always listen to you. The physicality thing. So, you know, 2 minutes in, boom, two laggy, off you go, run straight at Sexton and Van der Fleer. I think he makes about 10 metres. And it was like, wow, flashback to 2019. So they seem to have a physical edge. I have heard people this week make the point that in terms of weight on the scales, the teams are actually similar. They seem to have a bit more dynamism about them, though. What can we do to counteract that? Because that's now three times in 12 months that's come up for us.
Yeah, I don't think the weight thing is the issue. I think what happens there is every time, the reality is, if you're preparing to tackle two Vinopolas or two Laggy and you get your tackle technique wrong, you're going to be getting knocked out. So the best thing to probably do is you probably have to chop them around the knees. But every time you do that, you've got to probably have to sacrifice your own body and say, well, potentially this could be my last act in the game. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of someone with that force coming at you. So Johnny went high and he bumped him off and he gets 7 yards, and Josh van der Fleer is probably half the size of two Laggy. That's what happens. But Josh is on the team because of his repeated, consistently good efforts in and around the breakdown. But for a one-on-one, two Laggy's going to win that all the time. But we were thinking maybe over 20 collisions, he might only win it 12 times and Josh will do it 8 times, but he can slow down the ball so many other times as well. And but it never comes down to you know, one or two performances. I thought individually in their subunits and in their units between their kind of front five, middle five, back five, England were better than Ireland for that 80 minutes. And that's what you're judged on. It's that 80 minutes.
There's an interesting point I want to put to you. I almost need to put it delicately enough, because we're talking here when it comes to this Irish team about guys who've won big competitions at club level, provincial level and international level, who've put in huge performances. And so you have to think they are in the practice of mentally preparing themselves for big games and doing it properly. And yet it's very easy, again, from the ditch, from the studio, to look at that game and say, well, I can see James Ryan is at the pitch of this thing. I can see he's playing angry, playing on the edge, which is what's required. And I'm looking around, Stander to a point, he didn't take a backward step too lightly, and, you know, a bit of Greco-Roman wrestling at one point. But I'm looking at James Ryan and I didn't get the same vibe off the rest of the team, which is probably what you need at Twickenham. And so, given all the things Farrell has said about playing with grit and traditional Irish values, I was very surprised at that.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I think potentially, was there a little bit of, okay, Scotland a little bit off, Wales bonus point win, that's the true Ireland. We have a good build up for England, but worst case scenario, it'll be a very tight game, I think. But we weren't at the pitch at all. From the minute the ball was kicked, you could see that England had the momentum and they continued with it, and they drove that point home. Yes, they did, because of their own inaccuracies, not put on scoreboard pressure, but they were better than Ireland all over the pitch, no doubt about it. I think for probably going forward, for if you're looking at 2023 for a World Cup in terms of what's needed, I think the front five will have to be looked at from Ireland in terms of where are those. Like, Cian Healy has an injury now, and Cian Healy is, obviously, I think he could be 33, so he's potentially won't be there for the next World Cup. Who's going to play? Hooker. Tadhg Furlong, I thought it was immense against Wales, a quieter game against England. But there's a vacancy in the second row as well in terms of who'll partner James Ryan. I thought Peter Manny was very good the last day. The composition of the back row is there. You know, there'll be question marks over the halfbacks. There'll be question marks everywhere over that performance. But that's where it is, yes. But as you've gone back to your previous point about this team has won big and it's lost big, it has, but it's still probably at a stage where at national level it hasn't. It depends how you define what big is.
Yeah, well, in World Cup terms is what you're getting at.
Well, exactly, but also like in the Six Nations, you don't have South Africa, Australia, or New Zealand, obviously.
Yeah, so you can delude yourself into thinking it's better than it is.
Well, I think, and I was in those teams that it was, but I think when you step aside a little bit, we have to accurately analyse this and basically ask the question: has anything changed, or will anything change for 2023?
Well, at the moment, it doesn't feel much like it, I have to say.
Well, I think, in fairness to Andy Farr, what he's decided, he's put out the best available players for him for the Six Nations. I think in the summer, he'll have a review, and I think he'll go, he may have a different tactic on that. But like he's decided he's going to win this. And the strange thing about it is you put it, well, with the way the game's going now, but if you put a decent score on Italy, then you beat France and you win the championship. It's crazy the fine margins we're talking about.
Yeah. I just want to play, by the way, to finish off on the aggression point. Brian O'Driscoll is on OTBAM tomorrow morning. The lads have already recorded the chat, and he talked about, I suppose, the lack of aggression ultimately in the Irish back row and maybe the team generally. Just have a little listen.
I don't know about the second row thing. I think about the times of the players that I played with. Paddy Johns, definitely not as skillful as a James Ryan or an Ian Henderson or a Paul O'Connell. But he was a thug, and he loved trying to maim people. And I remember playing against him in 99 after playing the World Cup, and I saw him in a ruck, and his kind of head was popped up, and he was primed to get absolutely smashed. And I came running like from about 15 yards away and hit him square in the chest. And as I lay down on top of him, he was like, "Dricka, that was some shot." I was like, "Oh my God, I've literally given him everything that I have. And he's commending me." And so there's guys like that. And, Jeremy Davidson was a tough nut, just as I was coming in. He was coming to the end of his international days. Paulie, Mal wasn't really that sort of guy, but he was a very talented, he was almost a bit more of an Ian Henderson type player, very talented, quite skillful, very athletic. So
if only Ian Henderson had the aggression that his frame suggests he could deliver, he'd be unstoppable.
Lots of players get angry sometimes, but it's playing angry the whole time is part of being a really good international player and a world-class international player. And where, there is, to coin Paul O'Connell's phrase, put the fear of God in them, there is an aspect of that, of people, of respect before you take the pitch going, "This guy takes no backward step."
Yeah.
And that's why the New Zealanders rated Shawnee so much because they knew they were getting it.
Yeah. So on the back row point, Ronan, Peter Manny, you said, you know, played well the last day and came on and did well against Wales as well. Scotland, Standers had two man of the match performances. Van der Fleer's abilities at the breakdown are much discussed. And yet everybody I've heard talk about the game since has said there are, that back row still quite isn't cutting it. So what do we do here? Do we still need to almost rip the plaster off and say, right, we need to get 2-3 new lads in there pretty quickly?
No, I don't think you need to do that. But I think there's in that it's always been Ireland's most competitive area, and it's key positions, obviously. But I think we will see more of Caelan Doris. That's for certain. Mm. I think he will definitely start against Italy. But also what's really crucial in the back row is getting the balance right, Joe, in terms of kind of the, what's the word I'm looking for? When you have the symmetry between the three of them is really, really crucial. And obviously then if you have a forwards coach, one of them needs to be a jumper. That's Peter O'Mahony, I think. And then one needs to be a carrier. That's CJ Stander. But
they probably all need to be carriers, really, in the modern game, don't they? For good days like Twickenham.
But I think, CJ has a carry threat, but he doesn't have an offload or a tip threat. Peter O'Mahony, I think, has carried well, but that's not his natural game. Josh van der Fleer is more a kind of a stopper poacher as opposed to, well, he's a good link man as well, in fairness to him. Devon Toner would be more a set piece man as opposed to a carrier. James Ryan can do the carrying. Cian Healy can carry. Rob Herring tries, but I think we saw the step up between playing, you know, Heineken Cup, Champions Cup level to what's involved at test level at Twickenham. It's poles apart. Mm. And that's what people struggle to understand.
Sexton, the kicks, I mean, he said himself, he's had a few of them of late. It's just a technical quirk he has to sort out. Nobody loves the look of the strapping on his knee either, I'm sure. He's 35 in May. That is a concern. Away from the try where, you know, the ball took a bounce and the missed kicks, his general play on a day like Sunday where the team are struggling, what did you see in his general play?
I think he was struggling obviously with the frustration of probably some of the interpretations around the ruck from Yakko. But also, I think struggling with the malaise of his team. As a halfback or as a 10 especially, you crave space and time on the ball. He had zero on both fronts. But the opportunities, I suppose, in his own game where he'll measure himself on, he'll be disappointed in terms of catch pass or quality of kick from the ground or from the hand or from the restart. For something like that, I think you separate the goal kicking completely. There's a lot in his plate with the captaincy. I wasn't a fan of it day one, as I said here, in terms of, I think what he has brought to the jersey and to the position, absolutely huge honour and fully entitled to have that on his CV. But for me, a captain or a team is better suited with another leader as your captain as opposed to the number 10, because he's the on-field leader anyway. Everything strategically goes through him. Everything in terms of the tempo and the vibe on the pitch is through him. You just sometimes, for his own good, you need to take that away from him, I would feel.
And it's kind of his own brilliance that has become the case over the years. But you look at Ireland as well. Where's the other playmaker in that back line? You know, Larmour doesn't seem like a playmaker. Ringrose is out. You said Henshaw's a very good passer, but we just don't see it enough. The creativity that's needed to take the pressure off. Just,
well, unfortunately, he's injured down in Munster.
Yeah, well, that's the other problem, yeah. Who else? Is there anyone else coming who can do it? Because Tuilagi in his interview, Tuilagi afterwards, Rog said, post-match in the tunnel, he said, well, once we knew we shut them down at 9 and pretty much 10, you know, that once we shut those two down, we kind of knew we had the game. That was in effect what he said. I mean, that's not a direct quote, but that is how
exactly
Ireland are perceived.
I know exactly what you're saying, yeah. Well, and especially so, without Ringrose has X factor and has... but you've got to train that too, Joe, I think, in terms of how you want to play. Like, it doesn't just happen in terms of, like, Stuart Lancaster's on this programme many a time, and he'll talk to you about... attacking, splitting the pitch in half and having a double-sided attack and a double-sided threat. So it all depends on the vision, I suppose, you want to implement and see how you want to play the game. So what is interesting, I suppose, and a big positive in the last 2 months is that you have an under-20 team going to Franklin's Gardens, winning 39-20, playing a brilliant style of rugby. So with the national team, the way that game against Twickenham, you'd be surprised that there will be knock-on consequences. And people in that squad, especially with, I suppose, trying to change the World Cup cycle, these guys will be watched and scrutinised more than they would have been before last Sunday.
Last point then, clock is against us. So the risk factor, we're going to Paris now, sharpens the edge of that risk factor. It's easy to say let's make changes for Italy. Let's get Cooney in. Let's give Ross Byrne a chance. All the changes that people are talking about. So you with the coach's hat on, you're Andy Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're still in the championship. You know, you're a new coach. It's tempting to go with your quote-unquote trusted, experienced lieutenants. There is probably also a voice in your head saying, well, do you know what? If I give Cooney, Doris, Ross Byrne a chance in Paris, then if we lose, I can still say to the public, well, I'm moving things on. So the approach to Paris, what would you like to see?
Yeah, well, that is completely... You'd love to see what you just said there, but
the latter.
You could never do that as a coach.
You couldn't.
Because I think you could do that at the start, but then you've declared your intent about setting out your stall.
Okay.
But I think what Andy Farrell may do now, he might leave that till two games' time. And you might see that then because it's, you're only three years away from a World Cup. But you need to get guys' experience too. And especially going to Stade de France is an invaluable learning experience for a lot of young players. I think you'll see Doris either way. Genuinely do, and I think the temptation to make changes, there's a valid argument on both sides.
Byrne and Cooney, what about that for mixing things up?
You could, the argument is there, but for me, Murray and Sexton are better players.
Yeah,
I genuinely believe that. So if I didn't believe that, then I'd say, well, start Cooney and Ross Byrne.
Yeah.
You know, But I get the fact that it's Test Rugby Ross Byrne. Yeah, you can put him in there and maybe he'd show something because he's been very good for Leinster.
Yeah.
Also, the fact is, how many more chances is Conor Murray going to get? I'm not oblivious to that fact, but I think after a crushing defeat like that, I think the players realise that this is... It's over if I have another day like that in my next camp within this campaign.
Yeah.
It's over. I cannot have a foot to stand on.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
It sure is. Listen, thanks a million for your time. Much appreciated,
yeah.
Ronan.
Cheers,
thank you.
Joe.
That was
thanks,
Ronan O'Gara. And our rugby
thank
coverage
you.
Is brought to you by Vodafone. #TeamOfUs. Everyone in.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.